right, y'all. Season one, episode 12.
We have one episode after this one.
And then we've done season one.
What are we going to do next?
I guess season two.
Yeah, that makes the most sense, I guess.
Yeah. It's just crazy because, I mean, I've never seen any of these before. So it just feels like we're going back in time, you know?
No.
I'm excited for season two. I wonder, like, what is it going to hold?
Yeah.
You know?
Where will we travel to next?
Yeah. But this was a crazy case.
Yes, it made me very angry.
Yes, very angry. I literally, like, out loud was like, what?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, Tarala texted me and was like, WTH.
Yeah. What is going on here?
So this is, unless, if you didn't already know by the title, I'm going to tell you, it's Deborah Lynn Baker.
Yes.
Bookkeeper Deborah Baker had it made. Her boss was a Texas millionaire.
Jerry was a very significant person, a lot of money.
And his wife just happened to be her best friend.
They were very, very close. I mean, closer than sisters.
But when this threesome suddenly became a twosome, only one of them would pay for the crime. Money, murder, and a shocking twist of justice next on Snapped.
And this case takes place outside of Wichita Falls, Texas. And as per usual, with every Snapped episode we've covered so far, she was living the life she'd always hoped for.
She had it all.
All she ever wanted was to be married and be a good mother. And she married Tony Baker in 1975, and they had a son, Charles, the next year. Tony and Deborah were childhood sweethearts, and they were married for 28 years.
It's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, I mean, she said, too, that that's all she wanted was, yes, like, her whole life. She just wanted to get married, have a kid, mm-hmm, I guess be like a stay-at-home mom, like, just raise a family.
That was like her purpose.
Yeah.
And this is another one where we actually hear from Deborah Lynn Baker.
Mm-hmm. And she said too that sometimes she had to pinch herself because she was just like, is this really real? Like, she was happy.
Mm-hmm.
Just great.
Yeah.
Her attorney, Roger Williams, more on him later.
Yes. I love, love, love the fact, I don't know, any Snapped episode that takes place in the South just makes me happy because of the accents.
Like, oh, yeah. There's a lot of strong Texas accents in this one.
Roger has a good one.
Yeah, he does.
She had a high school son who played football, was well-liked in the community. I couldn't find anybody that had anything bad to say about them.
They seemed well-respected, well-liked, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So Deborah is having the time of her life. She's having it all.
Living her best life.
Living the dream. And then in 1982, it got even better.
How so?
Her friend, best friend Luann, married a millionaire plumber named Jerry Sternadel.
When I heard millionaire plumber,
uh-huh,
and I'm not throwing rocks at plumbers.
No.
How do they go hand in hand?
Yeah, I thought, yeah, how does this work?
Yeah. How do you make millions in the plumbing industry?
It feels very like one of these things is not like the other.
Yes. But then we find out Jeff Hall, who's a journalist, he says that Jerry was a significant person in North Texas. And then Roger Williams, the attorney, he said that Jerry owned and raced horses and he said he played with the crowd that invested in specialty ventures and he made his money that way. So real estate, horses.
Mm-hmm. He's like dabbling in a bunch of stuff and all of it happened to make him significant money.
Oh yeah.
I guess.
Up here.
He ran his plumbing business from his ranch and he ended up wanting a bookkeeper at his beck and call.
Whenever the narrator said at his beck and call, I immediately thought of Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
She's like his beck and call girl.
Mm-hmm.
Beck and call girl.
Yeah.
Call girl.
Yeah.
You, okay.
Oh, okay.
It's just, it was the Sister Act 2 Back in the Habit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just made the connection.
I think when I first figured out that the things she pulled out of her boots were not lollipops, they were in fact prophylactics. I figured out the call girl thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So Luann was like, okay, Deborah, this job is perfect for you. And he even got her family a place to live down the road from his ranch. And then Deborah ended up spending most of her time at the ranch, even sometimes spending the night.
I have never worked a job where I had to sleep over.
No. And she worked there for like 8 years. So I feel like that is such a far cry from the whole, like, I just want to be a homemaker.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not like this is a part-time job where, like, her kid's in school now and she can go, you know, work 4 or 5 hours a day or whatever, come home and still be with her family. It's like, you are now an assistant in a corporate-level job where you're, like, there all the time trying to move up in the ranks. Like, that's almost what it feels like. It's like, now you're working, like, 60, 70 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
How is this, like... I don't know, unless there was like a pivot in her life where she was like, now I want to only work, which it didn't sound like that's what it was, but maybe they just needed a lot of money. I don't know, but it's just such a big difference. Like spending all of your time with family, spending literally no time with your family.
And I think there's a difference. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't see Jerry being like, I want you at my back and call, so move in as a bookkeeper. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, being available, that's different. Because they live right down the road.
Yeah, exactly. You could get in touch with her pretty much anytime you needed to.
Exactly.
And if she's going to be there working for a few hours every day, that shouldn't that be enough time to talk to your bookkeeper?
You would think. Yeah. And I feel like Tony, her husband, what did he feel about this?
I know. That had to have just been so weird. Like, okay, I guess I'll see you in 10 years.
Right.
Like... It was just like she was there one day and then she was just gone.
Exactly. So Becky Sternadel, Jerry's daughter, said that Deborah just sort of appeared and she was always in the house.
I mean, and it's like fits perfectly because it's like her family was like, I haven't seen Deborah in about 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jerry's family is like, does Deborah live here now?
Yeah. Like, I only ever see Deborah.
She just came over one day and like never went home. Like, what is that?
I know. People who do that with their boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pack a bag, stay over one night, never, ever, all of a sudden now you live there.
Yeah, never went home.
Mm-mm.
Dr. James Murray, forensic psychologist, said that it's a peculiar situation. Is she an employee? Is she a friend? Is she like the pseudo family member? I mean, obviously Jerry's family was like, what in the world is going on here? Who is this person? Harold Newton, a business partner of Jerry's, said that...
I was always going out to the shop and talking to Debbie at the shop and everything, talking to Luann. When I first started, it was fine. I mean, it was all real, real close.
It was fine. They were real close.
They were like, real close.
They were nine eyes and fine. Fine.
It was fine. So, Deborah and Luann... were especially close. Deborah said that Luann was a really nice woman and that they were together 5 days a week. They would share their lunches together and they traveled as couples and went on some sort of vacations together.
Interesting way to put that.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Some sort of vacations. Okay. Okay. I'm
not going to get into the details.
Yeah. Just all you need to know is there were some sort of vacations.
Yes.
Don't worry. Maybe you don't think they're vacations. Yeah. None of your business, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mind your business.
Yeah. Dr. James Murray said that women can fulfill special needs within each other. They sometimes share difficulties and they seem to feel they can understand each other better than a man can understand them. They have that common, like, life experience.
Sure. There's something about that. That kind of got on my nerves, and I
Me
don't know
too.
Why. It feels like mansplainy.
A little bit, yeah. It? And I was like, okay, but also, does it need to be said that like women can be friends and they need that? Like men also need other man friends. Like
yeah, like fart
whatever.
All over each other and stuff.
Yeah, who else are you gonna fart with? I guess you can fart all over your wife.
You could, or if you have, I don't know, a dog.
Yeah. I would really like my husband to find a fart buddy. That's not me.
He did. It's you. Yeah, exactly. And then y'all got together and made two little fart buddies. Yeah.
Now I'm surrounded by all fart buddies, and my dogs certainly don't let up on it either. No. So
fart puppies, all fart buddies.
Yeah. Yes. All the fart buddies. Yeah. Yeah. It was just really weird. And I'm like, yeah, it definitely felt mansplaining. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Because you know, whatever.
You know what women need.
Do you don't know me? You don't know what I've been through.
I know.
Get over it, James.
I know what girls like. So then they soon realized they shared more than lunch. They both hated Jerry. And he was driving them nuts.
Oh my God. I also thought Earl had to die.
Right?
Immediately.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And then for the remainder of my life, that song is stuck in my head. And Sloan, if it's not stuck in your head too,
then what are we even doing?
I know exactly. What's the point of this?
Are we even podcasters?
Exactly.
Harold Newton, the business partner, said that Jerry could rub people the wrong way really fast. And he said he was a horse's rear. Like, tell us how you really feel, Harold.
I know it. But also, I love that, I don't know, the connection with horses. And you don't really want your business partner or somebody. Like, I hope to God that whoever would be talking about me.
You think I don't call you a horse's rear every day?
Stop it. Stop it.
Just yesterday, I said, Andrew, she is a horse's rear. And I said, forgive me for my language. Okay, I'm upset.
Okay, well, I mean, you've got every right to feel that way. I just think about Aladdin. Remember, with that one awful, before he becomes Prince Ali, and he's like watching the prince to go up to the palace, and he's like, the guy's like so awful and real hateful to those kids and goes to whip him, and he's like, hey, and he takes it, and he's like, it's not every day you see a horse with two rear ends, and everybody's like, oh my gosh.
Okay, yeah, I definitely didn't get that at the time, so. I need to watch that again.
Sure do.
Yeah, it's been...
Now, the Cave of Wonders part's scary. I want you to know that now. Brace yourself. It's scary.
Okay.
Okay? The end with the snake, scary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just know that. Just don't be scared.
I'll cover my eyes for that part. Okay. Yeah, it's just, it's funny. He was, just the way he said it. And it's like...
The horse's rear.
Mm-hmm. We're like, okay. I feel like he's a... He's a nice guy. He probably has candy for everybody when you come over.
You know he does. Pockets full of it.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yes.
Deborah said that...
I think Jerry had some problems. He was extremely hard on his family. He was extremely hard on his kids, his stepchildren. He was hard on his workers.
And they both viewed him as incredibly hard to get along with. And I noticed literally every sentence... She said during this interview, she's breaking up. She's crying, just like tears streaming down her face, no matter what she says. And she's just like, he was just really hard on his family and hard on his workers. And she's just like, can't get it together the whole interview. Like, she's very upset about the whole thing, which was just like, I don't know. Maybe that's how I would be if I had to talk about something later. I have a hard time with the crying.
But, I mean, I think this goes back to, like, what we talk about in every episode or every case. It's like, what reaction would be appropriate?
Yeah. But it's like, years later, she's in jail.
She's in jail.
So, I don't know. It just seems like you could maybe talk about one aspect of it without tearing up. But literally everything she talked about, she's
everything.
Like, not able to talk about it without crying. It was just interesting.
I wonder if the production team is like, oh, here we go again. Here's the waterworks.
Yeah, we're just going to have to... I tried to get some shots without her crying, but we're just going to have to use all of them with her crying.
Exactly.
There's no other way.
In the spring of 1990, Jerry had reason to be outraged. Checks on his business accounts were bouncing like tumbleweeds all over the North Texas prairie.
I was like, wow. Just wow. Like, who... I always, like, when I hear stuff like that, I picture... Somebody like sitting down in their office and they're writing. Somebody had to script that.
Of course they did. Yeah.
So it's like
that kind of gold just doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder if like when she's recording the voiceover, she's like, do I really, you really want me to say that? And they're like, tumbleweeds, Texas. Come on, you get it.
Right.
And she's like, no, I get it. But do I have to say it? Like,
it's a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, there's no way you can read that and not be like, oh, God, are you serious?
How lame. I know.
Bless her. She stuck with it.
But you know what? It does paint a picture.
It sure does, yeah, because they were bouncing all over.
Mm-hmm. Jerry had never bounced a check in his life, but when he checked his accounts, more than $30,000 was missing, and he blamed Deborah, who was the bookkeeper, and Luann.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's probably the first two people you would check.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on who all has access to the bank accounts, but yeah.
I mean, the bookkeeper is a pretty good place to start.
I would think so. Jeannie Walker, Jerry's first wife, said that he told her Luann and the bookkeeper were stealing money from him and he was going to do something about it. She also said that Jerry was known to instill fear in people. Like, we kind of get some background on Jerry and the fact that, like his daughter was like, people did not cross my father. You did not want to be on his bad side.
Mm-mm.
And people were just like, people were scared of him. They didn't mess with him. They knew that they were going to have a reckoning if they did.
Well, and I think it was Harold Newton, his business partner, was like, this is a guy that could make sure that you never made money again.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Like, there would be repercussions. He would, it sounds like he was vindictive. Nobody said that word, mm-mm. but it sounds like he was very vindictive. Like, if he felt crossed.
Oh, yeah.
He was going to do whatever he had power to do
to
make you pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, he was so powerful in Northern Texas that he could make it happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah and Luann said it was all a big mistake. And Jerry swore that he would get to the bottom of it. But at that point, he had another problem, a bigger problem that he had to get to. And that problem was his stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Newton said, no, he told me he had eaten a taco salad or something and made him sick and he had to go to the hospital.
That's a bad taco salad,
it's
man.
It's not good.
I mean, I would be like, where did you get that from? Because I'm going to go there never.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-mm. So while he was at the hospital, doctors were baffled. Maybe food poisoning, maybe a virus, maybe stress. And after a few days, he was fine. So they sent him home.
Yeah. They couldn't find a reason other than...
we don't know.
Yeah. Well, and you look better today, so I'm going to consider it's fine.
Totally.
It's gone.
It reminds me of when I brought my dog into the vet because she breaks out in hives every year from like September to October, maybe August to October, November,
yeah,
something
August,
like that. It's
yeah.
ridiculous. She's allergic to ragweed, now I know. But when I brought her, they were like, well, has she gotten into anything different? No. Have you used any kind of different shampoo? No. Food? No. Nothing's different. Absolutely nothing is different. Well, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to like pay for allergy testing on her because I don't even know if you can do that with dogs. But I'm like, okay, well, thanks for nothing,
yeah.
Emergency vet.
Yeah. I hope it works out.
Right. Like, I could have done this all on my own and paid myself $400.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It took 3 weeks for doctors to get to the root of his problems. And they finally did one test to rule them all. It finally revealed what was ailing him. But unfortunately for Jerry, that test was an autopsy. She really hit that one hard.
The setup in this show.
Oh, yeah. Tambra Holcomb, horsekeeper for Jerry, said that Luann and Deborah were closer than sisters.
Tambra Holcomb. That is a name.
That's a name. It sure is.
I can see, when you see her, she looks like a horsekeeper.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Does.
Like, I could see her being out there, like, Terry Clark style with her cowboy hat on. And,
oh,
like,
for sure, yeah.
Getting stuff done, yeah. So, they literally said this in the show. No one in North Texas had the cojones to steal money from Jerry Sternadel.
Mm-mm, nobody. I that's another, she was like, are you, I have to say tumbleweeds in the prairie, now you're going to make me say cojones?
Cojones, yes.
Come on.
So before Jerry could get to the bottom of the money issues, his stomach started acting up for the second time. He was throwing up like the flu. Jerry Gamble, best friend of Jerry Sternadel, said that he was throwing up like the flu. He said his stomach just killed him and it was burning up.
I feel so bad for him. I hate, like, stomach issues are the worst.
Well, and it's like weeks on weeks on weeks. I mean, there's like a little bit of relief, it sounded like, but then it just kept coming back.
Yeah, and you're like, and you never know when it's going to hit you and just, I don't know, well, and growing up. And
bad enough to send you to the hospital because we've both, I think everybody has had a stomach bug at one time or another, but nothing like that to send you to the hospital. I mean, that's rough.
No, yeah, because I mean, even when you have like a really bad stomach bug, you know, you'll be dramatic and be like, oh, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die or like whatever.
Right,
but you're like, yeah, I know what it is, a stomach bug. It'll go away in a couple days. But yeah, if you've got to go to the hospital, there's something really going on there.
Something got to be wrong.
Doctors at this point were sure, because he went to the hospital again, they're like, it's just more food poisoning, dude. Like, stop eating those taco salads. How many times do we have to tell you that?
Exactly.
And so they just sent him home. They were just like, that's what it was last time. You'll be better in a couple days. No need to waste our time and money on that. So they sent him home, and Jerry got sick again. And at that point, he couldn't even keep down the cranberry juice that Deborah and Luann were giving him every morning. Deborah said that he was so violently ill and then he'd be fine. And then like a day or two later, it'd start up again and then it got worse. So by June the 4th, Jerry was back in the ICU, sick as a dog, telling everyone within shouting distance that people were trying to kill him. And Deborah said he would even point to like doctors and nurses and be like, they're trying to kill me. They're over here trying to kill me. Like, he
was delirious.
Seems like it. He wanted out of the hospital, and orderlies even had to like strap him down to the bed, and he still tried to escape.
Yeah, Jerry's friend, Jerry Gamble, said that he asked him to cut him loose because if he stayed there, he wouldn't be alive when he got back. And unfortunately, Jerry was right. 8 days later, Jerry was dead. Yeah. And the narrator says, if his death was a blow to his wife, she didn't show it. Becky, Jerry's daughter, said that even at the funeral, Luann was there and Debbie was right there, and Luann was laughing and happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, like having a great day. Just like, oh, sun shining, it's a beautiful day, I'm happy. I don't know. It's just like, even if you're not maybe falling over crying or whatever, the mood at a funeral is somber.
So I think that it is fair to say, because a lot of times we're like, well, we can't say what we would feel, or you can't say what kind of reaction is right or wrong. I do feel confident to say that being blissful and the happiest you've ever been at your husband's funeral is wrong.
Yeah. And we don't get a lot about their marriage, really. So, you know, there's no allegations or anything of like any type of abuse or anything like that. Like, I do feel like if somebody's in like this very long drawn out like abusive relationship and maybe that person dies, they might feel happier, you know, like, okay, I'm finally out from under that. And he was difficult. I mean, they said that and they didn't like him. So I don't know. I guess if she didn't like him,
yeah,
maybe she wouldn't be as like devastated, but still, you'd think out of respect for other people that did like him that you would just kind of like tone that down.
Not like flaunt how happy you were.
Yeah, like thank God that guy's out of here.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what she did. And yeah, and the only thing that we really get about any kind of glimpse into their marriage was that Luann and Deborah both couldn't stand him.
Yeah. Luann wanted Jerry buried right away, but the coroner insisted on an autopsy, and thank God he did, because otherwise people would have just been like, wow, it was just like this really weird intestinal infection or something. Like, we have no idea what it was, but he just got sick. Must have been something he ate.
I'm honestly so surprised that she didn't insist on, like, cremation, because you can exhume a body.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So they do the autopsy, the toxicology comes back, and they find out that he had enough arsenic in his body to kill an elephant. That's a big deal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, on his death certificate, it said, patient continually given lethal amounts of arsenic until it finally killed him.
Jerry's first wife, Jeannie, said that someone has to intentionally give you arsenic. You're not going to give yourself arsenic. Like, she's like, that's not a way that you're going to kill yourself. Like, because it's miserable. He was so sick for so long. Like,
yeah, it is a traumatic, tragic way to go.
Yeah, you definitely do not want to be experiencing that for weeks on end. Mm-hmm. Like, it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Thomas Lee Kurt, a toxicologist.
Can we just, God bless him, this is 20 years, 16 years later. I hope to God the man got a haircut.
Yeah.
This man has a blonde bob.
He does. He does. And his face almost looks like he's already had a couple facelifts or something. I don't know. The whole thing together. I mean, maybe another haircut would help a lot.
I think it's the start of something good, you know?
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, I'm not here to say how someone should live their lives. If he felt fabulous, then by God, do what makes you feel fabulous.
Yeah, but why not? Yeah.
It's a look.
It's a look, yeah. He you know, talked about the symptoms of arsenic poison and how, you know, it's nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, agitation, confusion, like all these things. And he, you know, confirms what Jeannie said, that like, yeah, nobody wants to go that way. It's a horrible, horrible way to go, especially how like prolonged it is.
And the agitation and confusion makes a lot of sense, because Jerry was like, and I mean, he said somebody was trying to kill him, which he wasn't wrong about,
mm-hmm.
but he was saying the doctors and the nurses were trying to, you know, I mean, it was very... Yeah. Telling well, you, of the stage of arsenic poisoning that he was in.
Yeah, and if you can't tell where it's coming from, like, you have no idea what's happening, and it's like, you know, at this point, everybody's a suspect, I guess, to him, too.
Who do you trust?
Yeah.
By nightfall, the local law was all over the Sternadels' place. The community was ready to find the killer as well, and the thought was, if someone could take down someone that could make or break you, who was safe? Then came a call from the mother of a boyfriend of Luann's daughter. It was a young man that stayed at Jerry's house with Jerry's stepdaughter, and he happened to drink some of the cranberry juice that was in the refrigerator.
That's scary.
I know. So Shirley O'Neill was one of the neighbors and the mother of that boy. His name was Tommy. She said that her son was the one who stayed the night and had gotten very sick after, and she said Tommy drank some of that cranberry juice in the refrigerator and had gotten sick and thought it might have been spoilt.
Yeah. Also, does cranberry juice spoil that bad?
Yeah.
Like, because he was really sick.
Like, violently ill.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not as much as if he had been drinking it for days on end. But
right. But even having just a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The next day, he started feeling better. But authorities had him tested anyway, and they found unusually high levels of arsenic in his system. Can you imagine his mom?
Mm-mm.
You have arsenic in your system?
I would never let him. He would become Bubble Boy.
Exactly. Or like if she, once she found out who did it, it's probably like safer for Deborah to be in jail.
Yeah.
She's like, you could have killed my son.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that is a very irresponsible...
Yeah, anybody, they both had kids from like previous marriages. There's a lot of people in that house. Deborah's staying there. I mean, you know, whatever. If she hadn't had anything to do with it, like, you just don't know who's going to go in the refrigerator and get something to drink. And they might see juice and be like, oh, okay, I'll have some of that.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, I've seen that with other cases of like typically women trying to poison their husbands or whatever. And they'll put it in like banana bread or pudding or cake or whatever. And they leave it in the refrigerator, and like their kids could very well get a hold of that. It's so irresponsible. And it's like, mm-hmm. can you think outside of yourself for 1 second and think about how much worse this could be? Like, it's already bad enough to try to murder somebody. But
absolutely.
What about your kids?
Right.
Yeah. The police found the empty juice bottle in the ranch dump. So it was empty, but they did find it. And we know that it was in the refrigerator because the kid got sick from it.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, they have it tested.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to say this guy's last name. James Earl Sigafus?
I thought like that was it.
He was another business partner of Jerry. Said that underneath the cap of the cranberry juice, there's a little cardboard insert. They pulled that off, and it was loaded with arsenic when they tested it. So at this point, they know it's poisoned, that Jerry was poisoned, but they just don't know by whom. Could it be Luann, Debbie, his kids, a business partner? The answer would take some time to find out.
So this is 1990 when he has passed away. Now we go to 1991. Deborah and her husband, along with Luann, moved to San Marcos to start a trucking business. And for 2 years, it looked like Jerry's murder would never be solved.
Then in June of 1992, police got a lucky break. Somebody stopped paying rent on a storage shed in Wichita Falls. When the manager opened it, he found papers belonging to Jerry Sternadel. And since that case was like prominent in that area.
And unsolved.
Yeah, and unsolved. He immediately called the cops, did the right thing, and was like, you need to know about this.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness he, you know, paid attention and all that.
Oh, I know.
The police go over to the storage unit. They get a search warrant. And when they get there, they find a bottle of arsenic poison.
Like, if there's not a smoking gun, I don't know what is.
You know? I know. And it sounds like it's like a bottle with like skull and crossbones on it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't open this.
It's like a cartoon drawing.
Yeah.
Poison.
And the storage shed was rented under a fictitious name, but the address connected was Deborah's address in Holiday, Texas.
Deborah Lynn Baker.
Hmm.
Ugh. So that was enough for the police. They might not be able to get Luann, but they were going to get Deborah. So on May 14th, 1993, they arrested her on the charge of first-degree murder in the death of Jerry Sternadel. And they hoped that they would get Deborah to explain or, like, give up Luann and say that she helped her, they helped each other. But Deborah said that she always got the same response, "We don't think you did it. We think you know who did it." And Deborah insisted that she was innocent, and she refused to give up Luann.
Mm-hmm. And Deborah was like, you know, I would have had a hard time believing she did it if I heard it from someone that she did. Like, even if Luann told me herself that she did it, I wouldn't believe her because she's just not that kind of person. Like, she would never do something like that.
She's like, even if somebody told me that I did it, I wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, obviously. The police are like, we know you did it. She's like, I don't believe that.
Nope.
I don't believe that.
I do not believe it.
You're not going to make me believe it either.
Nope.
Deborah is obviously very loyal to Luann.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to give her up for anything.
Mm-mm.
She just will not believe it.
Nope, not even if she heard it from somebody. Multiple people, she wouldn't even believe
it. Multiple people. Mm-mm. But it is, like, I don't know, like, Dr. Murray saying one would maybe look to repay her with payments of some kind or whatever. Like, I don't know if maybe Luann, because she inherited Jerry's estate, maybe mm-hmm. she was taking care of her family or something. And so she's like, well, I'm not going to ruin that cash cow or like whatever it is. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't elaborate on it. So
no,
I don't know. But I mean, Deborah was in prison and she's all alone for the death of Jerry. It just seems like at some point you'd be like, hey,
I'm not going down alone here.
Yeah, a lot of people would throw the other person under the bus, but she wouldn't.
Loyal.
Her trial began on January 18th, 1994. She was facing life in prison. Dale Cope, a juror, said,
she didn't look confident. I don't know if that was an act or what it was, but she did act confident that she wasn't guilty.
She didn't look confident?
I know. I watched that 3 times to make sure I got it right, and I was like, was she or was she not confident? I don't get it.
Yeah, he said she didn't look confident. I don't know if that was an act.
I kind of want to do his voice.
Do it.
He was like, well, she didn't look confident. I don't know if that was an act or what it was, but she did act confident that she wasn't guilty.
I wish you could see this guy's mouth when he talks. There's something so weird about how he does his mouth.
It makes me so uncomfortable.
You just see his tongue moving so much. And I've like never been aware of somebody's tongue when they're speaking. But it's all you can see when he's talking.
Heavy on the tongue.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
I know. I'm sure he's a great guy.
Sure, sure.
But he weirds me out.
Yeah, super weird.
His tongue does.
Yeah. The prosecution laid it all out. Arsenic, Deborah had it. Money, Deborah was stealing it. Thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars from Jerry and was about to be fired. And Deborah and Luann were bosom buddies and she spent all kinds of time there.
Mm-hmm. This is the second Snapped episode where we talk about bosom buddies.
Really?
The first episode we did. Ugh. Was it the first one? The second one, it was the one where the woman, she had all those clothes and jewelry and things, and then she had a drinking problem, so she went to rehab, and she met that woman, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And they were bosom buddies.
Yep, yeah. And I think Snapped thinks that bosom buddies means a lesbian love triangle, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it's the second time they said it, and there are some allegations.
Yes.
In this one, but the defense was like, eh, well, this is all circumstantial. You don't have anything. And the prosecution was like, well, it don't matter. I'll see your circumstantial and raise you a toxicology report.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the toxicologist was brought in to explain what dying from arsenic was like. And Dr. Kurt said, arsenic is a heavy metal in the family with like lead, mercury, cadmium, and other heavy metals. It causes severe nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and agitation. And shortly after follows liver dysfunction, electrolyte loss, and death. But the defense, like, so the defense wasn't saying arsenic didn't kill him. They were like, okay, fine, he died by arsenic, whatever. But they were saying that the amount in the juice container wasn't enough to kill him. And that he could have been poisoned anywhere. Texas is full of arsenic. You could drive down the road and accidentally drink a bunch of arsenic.
So here's the thing. I thought that dangerous places to live because of, like, let's say, animals and spiders and things. Australia? Scary.
Mm-hmm.
Africa? Scary.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about Texas being scary because of all of the ways in which you could trip and fall into arsenic.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I guess, obviously, like, Texas doesn't want that secret to get out because they want people to visit, but I will not be going there anymore because I certainly don't want to accidentally get arsenic rubbed all over my body.
No, 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 no.
Yeah, like, Texas is full of arsenic. So you tripped and fell into a vat of arsenic? What are you trying to say? This is ridiculous. Deborah said she told the doctors at the hospital that Jerry had a bottle of mercury because of the horses, and he played with it all the time, and it contained arsenic.
And she was like, nobody really did anything with that. They didn't really seem to care about that, but I said about the arsenic.
Because it's dumb, and it did not happen. Who plays with a bottle of mercury knowing that it's very dangerous? Like,
right.
Whatever.
It, yeah, like Russian roulette with a bottle of mercury in your, yeah.
It's like he just, you know, would open it sometimes, pretend to take a drink of it. Like, I don't know. She's just,
you're like, glow. Gotcha.
Yeah. I only drank a little bit of it, Deborah. Don't worry. I won't die.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prosecution tied the arsenic back to Deborah because she had it in her storage unit. Okay, Deborah?
Yeah. So the defense attorney, Roger Williams, doing what defense attorneys do, is saying that, well, hang on, we don't know that it was Deborah's arsenic because her fingerprints weren't on the container, and no one ever identified, like, I think what he means by this is actually seeing Deborah.
That's exactly what he means
rent
by
the storage unit.
Or ever go there to, like, check out bottles of arsenic.
Yeah. But who would give her address? Are we saying somebody is framing Deborah?
That appears to be what.
And if they were going to frame her, wouldn't they give her full name, like her real name? Why would they put it under a fake name?
Yeah. This storage unit is rented to Holly Golightly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at Deborah's address.
Yeah. Because, like, I feel like if I at some point was like, okay, if I just went bananas and decided to steal somebody's credit card number and buy a bunch of stuff on the internet, I'd be like, well, I only have one address, so obviously I have to send it all to that address. Like, I don't know of a way to get another address, you know? So, like, if you're only going so far with it and you only know so much of what you're doing, you know, it's like, she's obviously not a criminal mastermind because she's like, okay, I'll put it under a different name. Nobody will know.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to have an address to tie it with. So I have to tell the truth on my home address because I don't have another address. You know, like.
Exactly, yeah.
She just
done got caught.
Yeah, because nobody's going to Nobody's going to do that to frame you. And they don't even say she's been framed.
Mm-mm. They kind of hint around at it, but yeah, they don't ever come out and say it.
Yeah, they don't make like a huge deal of it, so I don't know. The prosecution said that the motive was that more than $30,000 was missing from Jerry's accounts, and Deborah was bouncing his checks all over North Texas, tumbleweeds here and there, everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Prairies and whatnot.
But Roger Williams said Deborah didn't even have access to Jerry's bank accounts, and she couldn't write checks. I would like to know if that's actually true.
Yeah. If Deborah could not write checks, guess who I bet could write checks?
Mm-hmm.
Her best friend, Luann.
Mm-hmm.
Her bosom buddy.
Yeah, so were they, like, writing checks and doing all these, like, lavish vacations and shopping sprees or whatever together?
You know what I think it was like? When, on Parks and Rec, when they treat yourself?
Treat yourself!
That's exactly what it was like.
Yeah, Deborah got to work and Luann was like, hey girl, treat yourself! Like, yeah.
Yep.
Because one of them did, and it definitely does seem like they had knowledge of what was going on together. They did everything together. And Deborah was the bookkeeper. So if she didn't have anything to do with it and $30,000 goes missing, then one would think the bookkeeper would raise a flag and say, hey, Jerry, I can't write checks or anything. I don't even have access to your bank accounts, but I'm seeing here that there's money missing. We need to take a look at that.
Well,
but she didn't.
That's her literal job.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think she had no knowledge of it, because you would have noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you noticed it and you were following the letter of the law and practicing bookkeeping ethically, you would tell your boss about it.
So when the prosecution's evidence didn't work out so well, they began to bash her character. And according to witnesses, her relationship with Luann was downright steamy.
Mm-hmm. Jeannie said that in her opinion, Deborah and Luann were sexually inclined toward each other. Well, that was an interesting way to say it.
Well, again, let's just call a spade a spade. This is 2004.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Things were different.
Yeah.
James Earl Sigifus? Said the business partner said that he went to the house one day knowing that Luann and Debbie were in the house, and when he got them to come to the door, Debbie was buttoning her blouse.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that happened, either she was changing clothes or maybe something was going on.
Or they were motorboating.
Possibly. But, I mean, you know, regardless, so fine, if they want to have a relationship, who cares? But it definitely does maybe play into motive or the fact that they would have a reason to protect each other, or they would have a reason to, like, help each other cover up stealing the money or whatever. Like, okay, they're friends, but if they are romantically involved, they care about somebody. I mean, people do a lot of stuff for somebody that they have a romantic relationship with, mm-hmm. you know, maybe certain stuff that you wouldn't normally do or whatever. And maybe they both can't stand Jerry. They don't want to put up with him treating them the way he does anymore. And so they both say, you know what? The only way we can be together and keep this money is if he goes away. Like, affairs can play a lot into motive, so.
Well, yeah, and I feel like something like murdering someone together can bond you. And even more so, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot there. I'm just thinking about what Dr. Murray would say about bonding and girlfriends and friendships and things like that.
Yeah. Let me explain to ladies why ladies enjoy. Do what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all that being said, gossip and innuendo didn't make Debbie guilty, and Luann wasn't on trial. But as is common in Texas, Jerry was on trial. So Roger Williams, the defense attorney, said,
well, in Texas, the defense of a murder case always puts the character of the deceased in issue. It's kind of a Texas murder defense, is that the person's not a person that anyone cared particularly about.
And he's, like, smirking and kind of giggling about it.
Yeah. Like, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's a Texas thing, then Texas, I urge you to reevaluate your defense methods because, again, like, we covered the Jinx on our Patreon on the other podcast, Killer Queens, and the defense attorney in Robert Durst's murder trial of Morris Black essentially said the same thing. They tore down Morris Black's character, saying that he was, you know, a crotchety old man. He was a curmudgeon. Nobody liked him. He was hateful. He was a loner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody would miss him. So what does it matter anyway? Like, and he literally said, there's an old saying, you know, that you would prosecute a horse thief in Texas worse than maybe a murderer because we don't have any horses that need stealing, but we do have some people that need killing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he did us a favor by getting rid of this guy because nobody likes him anyway.
Okay, and what came to mind just now, and I had to look it up to make sure that this was set in Texas or happened in Texas, the movie Bernie. And he killed that older woman that he befriended, and they had to move the trial to another city in Texas because everybody was like, well, I mean, she was god-awful. And they were like, well, I mean, we would have let him walk.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, nobody in that city liked her, which, I mean, I get, like, I don't know. It's still awful.
It is. I'm sorry. Who you are as a person... We don't get to make the calls.
Right. Yeah.
You are so terrible, you must die.
Yeah. So the defense has a field day with Jerry's character. Everyone in Clay County knew Jerry and had a story about him, and they were literally all bad. Nobody liked him.
Mm-mm.
And Becky was like, my dad was a very powerful person, and some people might have wanted him dead. I mean... Call a spade a spade.
I know.
Whatever.
Jeff Hall, the reporter, said he could break you. He can make sure that you didn't make any money, didn't have a home.
Yeah. I mean, there's... And again, like we said earlier, it seems like he utilized that power.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seemed like there were enough examples in the past that people then didn't want to cross him because they knew... He was going to tear him down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't even want to mess with it.
Totally. And then Jerry's sex life was brought into question. Like they said, Jerry's sex life was as checkered as his business life. Roger Williams, that little angel from heaven, said he was a womanizer. He loved women and Luann stayed with him even though she knew he had a mistress and he had done some pretty bad things.
He's like laughing when he says pretty bad things.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He doesn't elaborate. No. He just says that.
It's none of your business, just like the vacations.
Exactly. Maybe they're vacations, maybe they're not. I don't know. Dale Cope, the juror, with his tongue flapping in the wind, said that they even brought up how he had had sex with his stepdaughter. And he had this other girlfriend and ended up buying her a house. I mean, I certainly don't like that.
No. But who can say if that's true or not?
Yeah, exactly. Like, at this point, Jerry is not there to defend himself.
Mm-mm.
And they're just bringing up all kinds of things. However, I would think that... I mean, because I guess the prosecution or the defense is like, well, the prosecution has no evidence against Deborah, right? We don't know that it was Deborah's storage unit really and like all these things. Her prints weren't on it, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, there's other people you should look at maybe. I mean, it really just sounds like they were just trying to tear Jerry's character down to be like, is it really that big of a deal that he's dead? But if they were presenting other people and saying, look, Luann is not the only person he was having a relationship with. That does lend itself to motive sometimes. Was he having an affair with somebody that became upset?
Mm-hmm.
That maybe he wasn't going to leave Luann or whatever?
Or was he having an affair with someone and Luann got upset and then decided to take him out?
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, we can point...
The finger of blame.
Yeah, it brings up the question of other suspects.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't sound like that's the way they were using it. It just sounds like they were like, well, he was a dirtball. Who cares if he's dead?
Yes.
whatever.
Dirt ball.
I mean, dirt bag? What? I don't know what I meant. Do people call people a dirt ball? What that was?
Well, first we're talking about horses' rears, and now you're saying the word dirt ball. Like, you need to calm down with the foul language.
I'm so sorry. I'm feeling salty today. Dirt ball.
What was the cat's name on Tiny Toon Adventures? It was something ball. It wasn't hairball.
As if I remember.
Okay.
No.
Well, forget you then.
Yeah. Anyway. Forget you then. Okay. So closing arguments were made on February 1st, 1994. The jury had a lot to think about.
Mm-hmm.
By all accounts, it did not look good for Deborah. But was Clay County better off without Jerry Sternadel? What a horrible question to ask.
Right.
The jury took 5 hours to reach a verdict. And they found her guilty.
I mean, how that is surprising is beyond me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Anyway.
Yeah.
They laid it down like it was kind of a bombshell. The courtroom exploded. And here comes little Dale Cope again. And the way that he talks, too, because he's talking about something that was a pretty emotionally charged situation, yeah. But he's very even-keeled about it, almost, like, indifferent and sounds kind of bored of it or something.
Uh-huh.
He's like, when that guilty verdict came out, Deborah's son went nuts, and the deputy sheriff had to keep him from going towards the jurors. He also tried to attack the reporters who tried to interview his mother.
Yeah, he was just like, it almost sounded like he's maybe medicated in some way where he's just like, it's bringing everything down a notch. Because you'd think that if somebody like went, I'll pull a word out of the White House farm murders or whatever, berserk.
Oh, yeah.
He went berserk.
Yeah.
That when you're retelling that story, because he was a juror, you'd be like, oh my gosh, I mean, his son went nuts, started trying to attack everybody. I thought he was going to attack me. Like, you'd think that you'd be a little more animated. And he's just like, yeah, he tried to get some of the jurors, too.
And they showed footage.
Oh, my gosh.
Of the son, Charles, going crazy. And it was terrifying.
It literally,
You know, like, when you try to, like, catch a cat, like a feral cat?
Yes! That's what I was gonna say. It was like, yeah, or like, you know those most dangerous or most shocking videos or whatever, and they have like the elephant that like gets out of the circus and is like stampeding everybody in the street? Like,
yes.
That's kind of what it was like, because it took like a bunch of cops to hold him down, and he was like losing it. And was like, just like going crazy on anybody he came across.
Yes. And the police that like had him wrangled, he was like, okay, no big deal, I'll just go this way then.
Yeah.
Like, he was
nothing
everywhere.
Was stopping him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was upset is an understatement.
He was going berserk.
Yeah. The sentencing hearing was the next day. Okay.
Like, I feel like this is the moment where maybe Charles was like, ooh, came in hot about that. I should have waited.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, oops. Yeah. Like, when I get really mad when I can't find something, and then I'm like, where is this? Oh, here it is. Like, that's exactly what he did, because I hope you're sitting down, or I don't know what you're doing. If you're at the gym, don't be, like, bench pressing something. You're going to drop it. It's mm-hmm. just crazy.
Or throw it at someone.
Yeah. They sentenced her to 10 years probation and a $10,000 fine for first degree murder.
And that was it. Done.
That's it.
That's it.
And Dale Cope was like,
you kill somebody in a horrible death and you get probation. I didn't think it was right.
I didn't think that was right. I mean, you kill a man in a horrible fashion and you get probation. I mean, it's, and okay. Jeannie said, yeah. This was horrible. Mm-hmm. She said it was like, basically, like, you could hear a pin drop in the courtroom because everybody's like, oh my gosh, like, are you serious? And she said the only thing you could hear was Deborah laughing so loud. Just, I imagine, like, a cackle, like, aha, got away with it. These dummies, like, whatever. Probation, who cares?
I cannot. I cannot. Horrible. With this woman.
if you are innocent, which she says she is, wouldn't you just be like overcome with emotion and like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Like, I don't have to be separated from my family. I don't have to be separated from my son. Like, just cackling like that? I don't know. Yeah,
that really feels like, well, I got away with murder, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So, 10 years later, North Texas is still talking about Deborah Baker. If Deborah Baker had stayed out of trouble, she would have never had to go back to jail. But in 2003, she was arrested for parole violations. And she was currently, at the time of release of this episode, she was currently serving 10 years in the women's prison in Gatesville, Texas. And she still had to pay the $10,000 fine.
Yeah, because I was really confused. Like, we see her in a prison uniform.
But if she got 10 years probation.
Yeah, I was really confused. And I was like, oh. So again, I mean, I don't know what her parole violation was, but okay, it doesn't sound like you're maybe the most stand-up individual.
Right.
You would think you'd be on your best behavior, especially for somebody who's not gotten in any trouble, but whatever it is that she did landed her. Because then, like, once she violated it, she had to serve that full 10-year sentence.
Mm-hmm. And it's just ridiculous because in the episode, they're like, if she could have just stayed out of trouble.
Yeah.
She would have been out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
She would have never had to go back.
Yeah, and she was saying that the whole $30,000 missing was just a misunderstanding. They don't elaborate on that, but it's like, you're saying that you've done absolutely nothing wrong in all of this. What were you doing committing a parole violation?
Exactly. Just ridiculous. So then we get on-screen text, and it says, Deborah Baker's husband and son visit her regularly, so she is still married to this man.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Ann Sternadel was never charged with any crime. She inherited Jerry's estate. Texas had no statute of limitations on murder. Jerry's daughter and his first wife have dedicated their lives to bringing Lou Ann to justice. And then I did a little bit of digging. It was really hard to find anything that was current, but I found an article from 2013 that said, Deborah was released from prison in June of 2013 after serving the full 10 years.
Yep. So she's just out and about now.
Yep. Unless, I mean, who knows? She probably might have done something else at this point.
I wonder if she and Luann are still friends.
I just cannot believe, because what you hear from Texas, it's either you fry for something.
Yeah.
Or you get probation.
I was so surprised, because it's like, yeah, normally they go kind of, the extreme other way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's just crazy. And then they've never charged Luann, which I guess if they don't have the evidence against her, I'm glad they haven't charged her, because you would see a lot of prosecutors do it anyway. I mean, you know, we see them charge people that they know full well didn't do it just because they want to get something off their books. But
I will say, though, if you are a criminal, you want a friend like Deborah Lynn Baker.
Yeah.
Because she took the fall for both of them.
Yeah.
And she got off light. Any way you slice it, she got off light.
Yeah, for sure. Even serving full 10 years, she got off light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Luann has never had to serve anything.
Nope.
And she got a lot of money. A
lot of money.
And out from underneath her husband.
Yep. That was a crazy one. I could not believe it.
I know. Yeah. What the H-E double hockey sticks.
I know. But that's that one.
I know. One more of season one.
Yep.
And then we will, as we've previously discussed, move on to season two.
Yeah. It's just the logical next step. We talked about all our options and we just said, you know what? We should just probably do season two.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it feels right. It's for the best.
Yeah, it feels right. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening.
We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.